in a world full of straight people. Aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race? And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
I am so jealous of our listeners right now because they get to experience for the first time the conversation that we just had with Kerry Colby. That is multidimensional, interdimensional. It is this life. It is past lives. It is the afterlife. It is everything. Kerry cares about all of it. Her show is on the WOW Plus Network right now. Kerry cares. She'll get into it. This is a super fun conversation. But before we start, let's talk about book club. Let's talk about homophilia book club. It's not real unless you want it to be.
Or maybe it starts now.
You
know what our tagline should be?
What should it be?
The library is open.
Library is open. Boom.
Just kidding.
A good read. You know, well, yes, I love it all. I love it all. I can't wait to workshop it. But yes, our friends have books and we are so excited.
Yes. Matt? Yes. Our dear friend, Heidi Rose Robbins, who has been on the show and is an incredible writer and astrologer to the stars, has an amazing book coming out on January 31st. You can pre-order it now, wherever you get your books. It's called Everyday Radiance. And it is a beautiful book inside and out. We have it prominently displayed on our coffee table just because it's so attractive. And a lot of you probably follow Heidi on Instagram. If you don't, you definitely should, but she posts what's called a moon note every day on Instagram. That's sort of the astrology for the day. And this book, this is essentially the book version of that. And whether you're an astrology person or not, it's just a really inspiring, feel-good sort of page of the day experience. So definitely get your copy of Everyday Radiance this very second.
The best. She's the best. It will enhance your life, as will a book that is out now called Life on Delay, Making Peace with a Stutter. My old Esquire colleague, John Hendrickson, you may remember a few years ago, wrote a piece about Joe Biden. It was actually during the 2020 election cycle, about like recognizing that Joe Biden is trying to, has strategies for overcoming a stutter that he has not fully gotten over. John is a stutterer himself, recognized a lot of like the ticks and the workarounds and the word choices and all that kind of thing, and did a piece about it and interviewed him for it, and it blew up and it led to this book that is kind of a reported memoir. It's his story, but it's also stories of other people who stutter, and it is such a like a reframing of the issue. And I'm making it sound like boring or didactic. It's not. It's such a really interesting read. And he's such a good writer. John Hendrickson, Life on Delay. If you are in the Los Angeles area, I will be talking with John Hendrickson at Skylight Books on Saturday, the 28th of January, 5 p.m. Come and join us. It's going to be, you'll just love him. He's a total dream. And there'll be a reception afterwards. I guess DM me for details.
Yeah, just DM Dave for details. Sounds like a wonderful book and wonderful experience. And I should say also, if you're in the Los Angeles area on February 12th, I will be participating in an event called the Galentine's Day Pickleball Tournament. This is hosted by our friends, June Diane Raphael and Jessica St. Clair of The Deep Dive, Casey Wilson and Danielle Schneider of Bitch Sesh. And it is a pickleball tournament. Proceeds are going to charity, and Kulap Vlasek and Matt McConkie will be serving as fashion judges. There is a dress code, of course, which is Wimbledon chic. And you can find more information about that and buy tickets to this incredible event. You could find all this information at janeclub.com/pickleball. February 12th in Los Angeles. I hope to see you there. And lastly, regardless of where you are in the country, we, Dave and I, hope to see you in Miami Beach.
Oh my God.
This spring, Miami Beach Pride. It's their 15th anniversary. Oh my God. We will be participating. We will be making appearances. We will be doing a live show. I don't know how many names we're allowed to announce from, I guess.
I mean, right now, I think we're just building buzz. Let's build some buzz about it. Miami Beach Pride is going to be fantastic. Mid-April in Miami Beach.
And we'll if you want to. And,
oh boy.
Yeah, you can get tickets. You can learn more at miamibeachpride.com. And for anyone who's traveling, Delta Airlines has given Miami Beach Pride an exclusive code. You can save money on your trip when you fly into Miami between April 3rd and April 24th. That code is NY22B when you check out, and note that certain exclusions do apply. But we will be hitting the road to join in the fun and chat with celebrity performers and activists and enjoying the sun and sand of Miami Beach. And we would love to see you there.
Acting a big gay fool down there. It's going to be epic. Which reminds me, I need to go back to doing crunches and push-ups. So we should scoot out of the way for now and bring in the iconic Carrie Colby. Matt, it's all happening. It's all happening right here.
Oh, it's all happening before our eyes. We have a special treat for the homophiliacs, for the Care Bears in the audience, for all the wowzers out there, all the wowzers,
all the world of wonders.
You know, they say every kiss begins with a K, and that's never been truer than today, because she is one of the iconic queens from Drag Race season 14. She's also the daughter of Sasha Colby, who's competing on the current season. She's got a new show on WOW Presents Plus called Carrie Cares. Carrie Colby is here. Welcome.
Carrie Colby.
Hello. How are we doing today? Happy, I think, good afternoon. I'm not sure what time it is.
Yeah. Where are you, Carrie?
I'm in LA.
Oh, okay. So it's still morning, barely.
Kind of. It's almost not morning anymore. How about y'all?
We're in Los Angeles. It's freezing cold, but we're getting through it.
Chilly 60 something, and it's crazy.
Yes. Yeah. I my body can't handle it. You are in a Powerpuff Girls ensemble.
Yeah, it's like a little two-piece like lounge set, but I'm here to give you sugar, spice, and everything nice.
That's right.
And you are. And I'm once again, sorry that this is only an audio medium, because if listeners could feast their eyes on what you're giving us today.
Yeah, but man, they can feast their eyes on Carrie Cares. Tell us everything.
This is true. And it's also a very visually stunning moment that we were able to put together. But yes, we have a show that is dropping, and it's so amazing because even just the idea of bringing this together, it was such a like fever dream and goal of mine to like, obviously like I wanted to make an impact on Drag Race, but I wanted that to be the, oops, I lost a headphone.
No, it's okay.
I can only hear you half as well.
No.
A good Jinx Monsoon reference. There we go. Sorry about that. I'm back. She's back at it. But yes, I wanted to make something very authentic and just very like real and engaging, because I know we've always seen like the things where someone does a TV moment and they come back with something, and there are times that it can be great or it can seem very vapid and very like self-gloaty and just kind of like weird energetically. And that was the opposite of what I wanted to do. So when I was talking with WOW Presents, because we all were kind of agreeing that we wanted to see a lot more of me than we got to on season 14. And we were like, so how are we going to do that? Have you thought about it? And I was like, yep, I have a whole Rolodex of ideas here. And obviously having like a fun, unique talk show TV moment was definitely one of them. But I wanted to do something different. I wanted to kind of do a vibe of like marrying all of my favorite talk and TV shows. So it's like very Oprah meets Z-Way meets Saturday Night Live with just a whole bunch of fun, crazy surprises and twists in between, but still keeping it very, very authentic. And I think what makes this so unique is that we built the skeletal base of the show and pretty much every creative concept, a lot of the questions, actually all the questions, and even the obvious, like the video responses, the some of the guests, the themes, all of those things really were built from the Care Bear community. We did like outreaching. We had like this crazy pink box at DragCon people got to write into. And it was very like, if you ever were to see Carrie on TV again, what are questions or themes or ideas that you'd want to see her do? And I think that part of what made this so much fun is it wasn't me trying to come up with things that I thought would be entertaining to the audience. It was the audience coming up with things that would be entertaining for them to see me do. And it made it so much more engaging and fun and also a lot more useful versus just braggy.
Mm-hmm. And how much of it is people simply asking for advice and like your brand of, you know, auntie wisdom versus people asking like specific, like personal questions about you?
It was, well, I don't know about the personal question. Maybe there was like a couple, because I kind of like, I just take everything at a grain of salt. But I think a majority of it was a lot of people tapped into their like, okay, well, since she's saying she's here to help us, help me, you know? So It was a lot of questions that kind of were like, and there were so many questions that got written in. So there were a lot of questions that asked the same thing from different perspectives. So on the show, we made it where we kind of combined both. It's like, get to know me, find out little things about me, get to know me on a much more intimate, personal, and raw level, but also get your questions answered, how to put mascara on, how to walk outside the house with a smile on your face, how to deal with bullying, how to deal with tough situations and relationships, or how to spark interest in different areas in your life. And so that's where we really started to build Carrie Cares from, because I am someone that I really do care about my community. I care about people in general, but I also wanted the whole show to really be about the fact that this is about me caring about the topics of what we're doing. So it's like Carrie cares about fashion, Carrie cares about family, Carrie cares about her self-care, you know, like all these little fun things, but they all tie into being very ultimately useful. And it's, I feel like this is a show where, you know, we're doing it the amazing Netflix style. You can go in and kind of just feast your heart out. You can watch everything at once or pace yourself. But it's definitely something that after you watch it once, you can always go back and watch it again, because the topics are pretty timeless. And I think that you'll always come out of an episode with a different perspective, a different viewpoint, a different way of approaching something. And so many questions are just so useful for like everyday shit, really. Or I don't know if we can cuss, but everyday stuff.
Oh, you sure can. Yeah. You sure can. It is available now on World of Wonder Plus. So get it. Feast your eyes.
Yes.
Obviously, we are biased because we're in the World of Wonder family. But if you're not subscribed to WoW Presents Plus, please take a look within. Ask yourself what's wrong with you and fix it. It is the official streamer of all things drag, and most importantly, all episodes of Carrie Cares.
Yep.
Yeah. Be a part of the solution.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Popular culture, Carrie.
Yes.
TV,
okay.
Movies, music. What in the world of popular culture does Carrie care about?
You know, I love to see things that inspire me or make me feel validated. And I think that my life has been so like in so many areas that like I find interest in everything. I'm definitely like a Euphoria holic. I love Euphoria.
Does that uplift and inspire you?
This it's like my satirical side. I don't know if it uplifts and inspires me, but kind of unfortunately, but like, I guess it's also good to see myself. It makes me feel very seen. Like specifically Rue's character, like I wasn't able or had the ability to be trans when I was in high school and openly about that. But my thoughts were still very just, you know, trans fairy thoughts 24/7. It consumed my life. So her story arc, just like really, really inspired. Did I say Rue? Rue's the drug addict. That one doesn't inspire me. It's Jules. My apology. Yes. So Jules, I think I'm backwards, but Jules' storyline is very much like, oh my gosh, like this is like who I was on the inside, but I wasn't able to be on the outside. And a lot of things that happened to Jules throughout the season, I relate to a lot of those situations. And then even just like Rue, like I definitely knew a Rue in high school. Her name wasn't Rue, but her situation was pretty much the same. And then just like the Maddie of it all, like the hot bitch banging on the door, open it up, let me in. I just loved it. And I mean, I can't be honest and not say like I had the biggest crush on like Nate Jacobs, and Nate's character type is like so my type when I was like in high school and like doing like AP college classes. Sometimes we'd have college kids in the course, and I'd just be like, oh my god, like 6'5" jock, yes please, toxic. Just toxic.
What did you grow up obsessed with pop culture wise? Like, who were the icons? What were the movies, music, TV shows that you loved?
I was so behind because it was weird. Like, I kind of was able to consume pop culture when I would be in school with friends or I'd hear what they were into. And I went to a charter school. So I went to like a pretty small school. Like, it wasn't like there was tons and tons of people. There weren't really any sports. I think we made like a volleyball co-ed league just so we could have like some fun after school type stuff. But I didn't really have like quite the traditional school experience, but I was always playing catch up. So I was like, and my catch up wasn't really necessarily like TV shows. It was more like moments in time. Like I'd go back and like, I realized that there was like a Victoria's Secret fashion show before they were problematic. So that was like, oh my God. Fantasy for me, like, oh please, I could watch Adriana Lima every day, all day, and I would. I would watch like runway stuff because Naomi Campbell, I realized she was, you know, a thing, and I was obsessed with Tyra Banks, and I kind of like saw myself with, you know, beautiful, strong Black women that were just like making it happen. And obviously at the time it was me living kind of vicariously through watching that, but I watched like a lot of like runways. Mean Girls, I think I watched that like 2 times a day, every day, because that was like what made me feel related to a high school experience at all. And then you kind of go through the rabbit hole of the satirical comedy. So you go to like Mean Girls, to Clueless, to, oh my God, I forget the two girls, Rami and Michelle, and all of the, you know, you kind of start to go through, and it was very slow, but like, I would just kind of like be playing catch up because people like, have you heard of this movie? Everyone's seen it. And I'd be like, huh? So I'd have to like stream it during class. and I'd be like, oh my God, I love that show. That was so fun. And that was kind of like what I did. I just played a lot of catch up watching different people's like pop culture references. So I understood what the references were in general.
Yeah. What are you listening to now? What's on your...
I don't know. I feel like, cause music is something that like is very personal to me. I like to hear things that inspire me because eventually we will be potentially going down the route of music, but it's not something that I want to, I'm not putting out like camp tracks or anything like that. So I'm taking my time with it. It's something that's very personal to me. So I like to have things in my playlist that sound like what I want to do. Whether it's the way that the song is mixed, whether it's all of the multi-melodies, whether it's the distortion in the background. I listen to a lot of different like bad bitch anthems, things that we all have heard from like Ariana Grande, or things that maybe we haven't heard yet that are coming out, or things that we may not hear, but definitely influence things we hear now. And I think like a daily mantra for me still is, of course, like Beyonce Renaissance. That is like that's my power hour. Like I put that on when I want to get things done, wake up, brush my teeth, work out, walk my dog, like do all my things, like get things done, and I'm getting them done with fervency. So like I love a good Renaissance. Like that's pretty much like a daily play for me at some point.
Hell yeah.
It's important.
It's yeah. It's one of those where like I almost don't even know what track one is anymore. It's just on
right.
It's like a Mobius strip. Yeah.
And also like I kind of studied that because that was, I think a lot of people had opinions, of course, on like Beyonce doing something so different and so queer focused, which to me, I'm like, why are people trying to roast this and read this? We've been asking her to be more vocal and more inclusive of us for a long time because she was always like, yeah, I love my gays, but y'all stay over there, stay blessed, God is good. And then now she's making an album that's like, oh, it's just gay everywhere. This is Pride Anthem 2020 forever. And people are like, you know, oh, this is so different. And it's like, well, duh, like this is what you've been asking for.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She's so brilliant with how she had one song and the end of one song is the beginning of the next song, which goes into it. And her references are so spot on. It's Black culture. It's bringing, people get mad when like major celebrities go back and reference things that have like it's already been done. We already did that. You know, we already knew about Kevin Aviance and all that. And it's like, okay, but the rest of the world that isn't necessarily in the queer bubble knows, and her amplifying that is just making it so much more authentic to the message that she's trying to put out there, which is acceptance and diversity. So I'm obsessed with that body of work.
I mean, where are the visuals?
Oh, I know. I have some friends that were like on some of the visuals because, you know, like the dancers in LA, they do everything.
Sure.
There's a dance cult of like very gorgeous homosexuals. And they are on everything. They're on every MTV VMA. They're on every award ever. And it's always the same boys because they like they know the choreo and they know each other and they're doing it. So some of them were on, obviously they're NBA'd up, but they were on set with Beyonce and they're like, she did the damn thing. It was done. We were there for days and filmed. And they're saying basically like, she must have just not liked. And she's one of those people, she's kind of like me in the way where like, it could be the simplest thing of like an eyelash could have fallen just enough for a few shots in the camera. And she's like, nope, throw it out. I'm not doing it. We have to redo the whole thing. But I don't know, she's also a very like smart and calculated person. So the visuals are there. I think she's just deliberately kind of starving us for them. And then she's gonna do some major like collab with Microsoft, and then everywhere you ever go it'll just be nothing but Beyonce visuals for the next 10 years. So I'm sure they're coming. I just think she's cooking something. It's cooking because there's also two more parts to the Renaissance trilogy.
Yeah
so it'll be here, trust me. She spent too much money for it to just disappear.
Yeah, I'm ready to live inside that simulation.
Yes,
100%.
When you talk about, you know, playing catch up with big pop culture moments, I think some of that has to do with, you know, growing up in an evangelical household, and you've talked about this at length, and I don't want to make you repeat stories you've told a million times, but you know, we know that you were, you know, disowned by your family at age 15, but can you talk our listeners just through some like, you know, just big milestones in your life from that point on, in terms of like coming out, performing, just, you know, the big moments?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, one of the things that people need to understand, and I think that people don't get that because they see what they see, but they don't always understand. So like, I always talk about that I have a lot of anxiety and social anxiety. I like doubt myself and I get very like nervous just by myself. And then when there's other people around me, it kind of sometimes can like put me in like a weird gridlock. And people are like, how? And I'm like, you have to understand, like, I might look like I've always had everything I've ever wanted. And I might, you know, seem like I'm just some person who's been running around flipping and bopping and dancing and doing my thing. But that's so far from the truth. In fact, for a long time, I was either punished for ever displaying signs of feminine behavior, or when I got put out, you know, Dallas, when I was 15, it was a different time at that point for being a person of color and queer. So then you would get like public ridicule and a lot of like, because I was so naive to a lot of stuff, they ate that shit up in the beginning. So I have a lot of like I guess trauma from like the earlier times. But I've really always been like, I want to work past it. I found my voice. I found my love through good beats and rhythms and fun things and watching, you know, divas like Beyonce. Like that was what got me through so much of that stuff. So it means so much to me, but I do tend to be like very kind of like awkward because I still psychologically am like moving past it. But also like every time I go to do something, there's a mental block of like at least a good 5 to 10 years of things of negative responses to all those things. But I think my biggest victory lap is that I've continued to work on myself. Therapy is a very, very important part of that journey. But even beyond all of that, it's like, I think that never giving up and never doubting myself. And even though like it got to where people would be kind of confused, they would see one thing like it makes no sense. It's like, it doesn't need to make sense to you because it wasn't your life. And thank God it wasn't. But I'm here now and I'm going to keep pushing, keep going. And even when it comes to like drag performing and stuff, like I've only been like doing stage shows. I started in like 2019. Like I would go out and like try to look cute and like get accepted in crowds and stuff. But it was actually Gigi Good who, because we all came up in LA doing drag pretty much at the same time. Me, Simone, her, there were a few other girls, but like we were like really like the girls. And she told me for one of her shows, like way back when, before she was on Drag Race, she's like, you need to get on stage. You need to perform. And I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then like, she's like, come to one of my shows. And I was like, okay, cool. Like definitely going to go support you. And the bitch pulled me on stage and I was like, not prepared. And that was like my first drag show ever. That was like 2019, maybe the very end of 2018. And like, that was when it all started. So I'm a lot more behind, I think, than I look when it comes to experience.
What was that first performance like? What did you do?
I mean, it was pretty stereotypical. This is before I was like necessarily in my trans confident era. So it was giving you know, just like a very gorgeous ultra breastplatey sex pussycat doll trying to project woman as much as she could. And I think my first number was Buttons by Pussycat Dolls mixed with like a good like 10 shots. And I'm like a lightweight, but I had so much anxiety. I was like, oh my God, I'm supposed to go on stage.
Yeah.
And I just like kind of came out and I was like, oh, if I think there are some videos somewhere out there of it. And it very much gives like baby girls first ever time on stage, blackout drunk, just struggling to get through it. But one thing I did know was the words. I didn't know anything else but the words, because I was like typical, hardly the type I fall for, and I fell, you know, so I was definitely method acting.
Great.
Yeah, it was fabulous.
you church lady vibes and sort of like spiritual auntie persona has been this like recurring motif for you. And,
yeah,
you know, I know you don't practice the version of Christianity that you grew up with, do you have a relationship to religion or some kind of spiritual practice?
Totally. So I think the way that I've explained it is that I think religion in itself is a lot of the problem with a lot of things that are going on. So I don't really consider myself religious, because I think that the whole belief and thinking that some other human telling you what to do because they were inspired by some divine thing and listen to me because I heard the voice of the Lord or whatever I heard, is like what you need to do to live a better life. And while you're doing that, pay my bills and they're going to be tax-free. So like, I don't know if I really agree with that, and I never will, but I think that having a relationship that is spiritually connected to the universe and to existing on this earth and leaving it better than you found it. And really, you know, as a soul, I think souls are 100% a real thing. And, you know, feeding your soul throughout your life's journey. I think every person on this earth is put here to experience. That simple as that. That is the purpose of humanity. You are here to observe, to experience, and to just like how a tree has memory because it's grown and it's developed in a space for so long and it's gotten the nutrients and the information from the soil. That's what our souls are supposed to do. We are supposed to experience many things, good, bad, ugly, in between. And that information is cosmically what kind of drives the entire cosmos to reverberate and reconstruct and recycle certain things, but also move us forward to new and bigger and beyond things. And I can't say I understand all of it, but I love having a spiritual connection to where I am always trying to learn and find more about that. And I think my upbringing in Christianity is what got me so so invested in soul space and heart space and learning what that means and learning to have a relationship with a divine creator. And I don't mind calling it God. I just don't like the idea that God gets like genderized and masculinized and marketed and propagandized. Like that to me is so stupid because if you look at God, if you look at earth, if you look at nature, it's a very feminine energy. And there's a reason it's Mother Nature, not Father Nature. Have you ever heard that? No. And Mother Nature is in a way a form of God living and breathing, which means that the cosmos has a feminine and mothering and nurturing energy to it. So I'm definitely spiritual, but I never really consider myself like religious. It's more that I think that it's just a journey and we're here to learn. And if you learn something, pass it on, because then you can kind of start that cycle. I always say that you can create a very massive tidal wave with just one small splash.
Yeah. What yeah. comes next after this plane of existence?
Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, I think Sasha Colby kind of told us, she said, you crack your neck and then you go up to heaven.
That's right.
And you get drag queen therapy. No, I'm just kidding. I think that, I don't know. I mean, these are like the things that like, right now I'm in like my sober era. I'm trying to do the first 3 months of this year completely sober, no weed, no alcohol, no anything. And just really, you know, have a very sobering and grounding time for myself to move forward. But before this year, especially 2022, I loved getting high with like some of my best friends and just smoking tons of blunts and then just getting lost in this conversation, very existentialism. And I think that, I don't know. I honestly feel like human existence, what we see here, is actually like it's truly a simulation. It's almost like this is the dream. And I feel like we almost get glimpses of that. We don't always remember it, but we get glimpses of that when we dream, because we go to such insane, multiversal, inexplicable places that like sometimes, like there'd be times like maybe you ate Thanksgiving food and you dream about turkey, you know, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But then there's times that you know, go to work and do your thing. And then you dream about like flying robot saucers and going to a whole other galaxy with faces of people that you don't even make sense to your human brain. And it's like, okay, well then where is that information coming from? Because it's clearly coming from somewhere. And that's when I think we almost get a look into what afterlifeism might be. I think that this really is like a Hogwarts of existence. And the soul is brought here to go through a few cycles to learn and evolve and do something with that. And then it moves on. And what it moves on to, I don't even think humans, we can't explain it, because it's a place void of emotion. It's a place void of any human experience, but it's so leveled up and beyond that if we tried to comprehend it, I think we would literally just like burst.
Sure.
So I think there's a lot out there. I mean, my goal is to try to find words to describe it as best I can while I'm here. But I mean, I always say I feel like I'm a completely like a mistaken alien pod species that got sent to Earth on accident. And then when I got here, they're like, oh, fuck, we weren't supposed to do that. But like, OK, fuck it. Let's see what happens. Yeah. I'm very experiment 626. I am Stitch.
In a world full of straight people, aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race? And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
Do you have a recurring dream?
So, you know, it's so interesting. I haven't asked that. I love these questions. I don't know if I have a recurring dream, but I'm a very big deja vu person.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Oh. She ascended.
I'm having a terrible dream right now that Carrie Colby exited the chat.
Oh, no. Oh, Carrie Colby is connecting.
Oh, my gosh. The metaverse.
You got raptured.
I got wrapped. They said, she's talking too much.
Speaking too much truth.
Wasn't that crazy? Oh my gosh, I'm back.
Back.
So to pick off where we left off, I don't know if I necessarily have a recurring dream, but I have a common dream story arc where I don't know how to explain it, but like I had a lot of very like, I guess what felt like prophetic dreams when I was very young. Like I've seen Carrie and I consider myself like my everyday person is Elise, but like my drag persona or my television or who I put out there to media is like Carrie. But I've seen this person with this appearance when I was like 3 and 5 years old. Had no idea how to conceptualize or explain that it was me, but I knew that it was me in the dreams. And that's kind of what pushed me to create what we see in front of us as myself. So I've always seen that. And I've seen snippets in my mind from like very young dreams. And sometimes I'll have the dreams when I'm older of like life situations. And I had because I'm like a spiritual person with like all these gurus and stuff around me. So they said that maybe when your soul comes to earth, there's like a video reel almost of your life experience that gets shown to your soul. And then the memory of that gets wiped. You basically like accept a contract. This is how it had explained. You see your life, and because there's no space or time, you see every detail. But it's like in a moment's notice. And your soul basically is like, yeah, let's do it. I want to do that. And it's downloaded media that exists. It's just not lived in this experience yet. So then you come to Earth. And part of deja vu is sometimes you can dream, you can touch that place in your dreams, or you can live that reality out. And in those moments, that's deja vu. You'll be like, I've totally been here before. I've totally seen this before, down to the color of things, the texture of things, the smell of things. Like I've been here before, but this is my first time here. And I've had a lot of those. So people have told me that like, maybe it's you connecting with your, connecting with like your reel that you were shown. And obviously I don't know all of it, but maybe sometimes I dream parts of it and then I'm able to access it in real time and live it out. And there are certain dreams I have, some of them I haven't even seen yet, but they have a feeling to them. Like I almost feel like I'm awake in my dream and I'm living in that dream. Like I can do this, I can touch, I can like sometimes in my dreams, like when they're that level, I'll like go and I'll like flip light switches, like, cause I'll consciously be there. It's so hard to explain, but I'll be there, but I'm not there. Like I can tell this is not this reality, but it's a reality. And I'll go and I'll like flip light switches or things like that. And I'll be like, oh my gosh, like, okay, I need to pay attention to this if I can. Usually I don't remember much of it when I wake up, but when I can, I'll remember like little bits and pieces. And I think that recurring dream is like a storyline of potentially my life. So yes, I do have that happen, but it comes and goes. I can never like just turn it on or turn it off.
And then do you have moments in this, you know, reality where you like getting on Drag Race, for instance, big moments that you're like, this feels like this was on my reel. Like this feels like this was predestined.
1,000,000%. I saw parts of my Drag Race reality in dreams. And that's what made me in times where I felt very insecure or I felt very lost or I felt like, you know, this isn't going how I wanted it to go. And then I would remember like parts of like I had dreams where I had met and interacted and like with Rue and seeing her laugh before. I had had parts where like my interviews, I had seen things and maybe that's how I knew what to say in certain moments. I didn't, funny enough, see the Jasmine Kennedy thing happening, the trans moment, but like there were just different parts with that were, there was a lot of deja vu and it was like weird stuff that like never would have been seen, like trips and conversations in the shuttle going back to the hotel that were like longer portions that I remembered, like maybe a full minute or so of like, I remember this conversation. I remember this looking around and seeing like the mountains in this area. Like, I remember this, but this is my first time in this situation. And I was like, ah, I'm meant to be here. And it, anytime that happens a lot to me, that's when I know, even if it feels like so chaotic and crazy, that's like, those are the moments like you better lock in, load up and live up, because these are those like key core moments. And this might be like crazy tea, but there are parts of
crazy tea,
right? There, I know World of Wonder's gonna rhyme with this one, but there are there are dreams of a drag race experience that I have had like that dream state real moment with that have not happened. And I do remember looking a bit more evolved from what I saw, like watching back season 14. So I can't say and won't say that like it's me on an All-Stars, but there is also moments where I've definitely seen an elevated version of myself, even in some parts more elevated than this, that have been, once again, that Drag Race set, but it was different and it wasn't what I already have been through.
I think that's simply visions of All-Stars. I can't, absolutely. I mean, it, to me, it seems so clear.
Yeah. We'll
you know, see. It's hard to, it's hard to ask about Drag Race because the fandom and the media coverage is so expansive that, like I said, right. I don't like asking questions that guests have answered a million times before, but I do have two. One is, because I know you're asked the same thing over and over again, is there something that you actually are not asked about enough from that experience that you wish people would, you know, give you the chance to address?
No, not really. I think for me, I truly was blessed where our season was very different from your typical game show competition series. It was really like a heart reel. It was really like it went from being a Drag Race competition series to basically a breakdown and a human representation of compassion and transformation beyond gender, but also with gender, and kind of the importance and the power of what seeing that representation on television does. It's so powerful to give permission to be one's authentic self that it even inspires more people to do that. And you had no idea in the beginning that was going to be what it was. So I really actually appreciate versus like interviews I've seen in past where it's been like, you know, who was fighting, who was this, all of that. And for us, it was way more like, I felt like I was able to share like way more heart things. And that's also what like inspired me to do the whole Carrie Cares, because there was so much vulnerability in some of the interviews, but sometimes those don't get put out. It's just like you and the writer or and the group of girls you're with that know what was said. So I kind of wanted to bring that interview style to a place where it could live and anyone, if they wanted to, could see it. So I actually, if anything, I don't have like a note that I wish I would have been asked. I'm actually very appreciative that I feel like we got something a little different from the normal, because it inspired and pushed me to make that even more of an accessible reality for everyone that I think is very useful.
Yeah. Well, my second question is, I don't know, probably much easier, much more shallow, but obviously the current season we're rooting for Sasha Colby. It goes without saying.
Sasha Colby's Drag Race.
We're expecting her to win. So it's not even who are you rooting for? It's who do you think is Sasha's fiercest competitor?
Oh my goodness. Well, it was funny because there was like a whole tweet thing, and this was before the first episode, where they're like, do you think anyone stands a chance against Sasha and her being there? And I replied just simply no. And it went kind of viral because I think everyone loved the comedy of it. But now watching it, like these girls have taken their drag notes. They are ready. They are realized. And you can feel watching it that there's like a sense of, there's more girls. So they're more hungry to really make moments. So like, I consider it not so much Sasha's competition, but like people who are also going to be key moment makers outside of Sasha, I think that we 1,000,000% need to pay attention to Sugar and Spice. They have a very fierce idea of what they're doing. And they are, I think, one of the most like AI created types of drag I've ever seen, to the point where they're identical. So they're amazing. I am blown away when I see how they like do things and create things. And they honestly, like, a lot of their reality is things that like I kind of felt but wasn't able to live. I didn't have the opportunity or the support. So I love seeing them because it's like, this is how it's supposed to be. And even with them kind of having access to whatever they wanted, they never got that genuine, authentic drag competition experience. And then they're living that in front of us on TV. That's gold. So I love seeing that. I think it's going to inspire a lot of people in the future. And it's going to open up a lot more doors for people who maybe haven't done drag in bar scene for a long time, but they've had an idea and they've wanted to live it out. Okay, well, if you have what it takes, go on TV and do it, you know? So that's really cool. I love Mistress Isabel Brooks. That bitch is fucking funny. And she is a cunt. And I love it because she's like completely unapologetic about it. She has Texas shade down to the whip crack. And I love, love, love her. Every time she's on that TV, I'm like, yes, read them. Like, I love her energy. Oh my God, Anitra, are you kidding me? Like, I commented on one of her posts recently, and I don't like the comparison thing of Drag Race girls, but I had to make one with her. And for me, it was a huge compliment because I am obsessed with my auntie. But I told her, I was like, you remind me of like a reborn, revisited, like not recycled, but just like repositioned, like new version of like Detox. I see so much of like Detox's energy, Detox's confidence, Detox's lipability, like just able to smack into it and give it to you real quick. Like she's such a, beyond Drag Race, she's always been such a smart crack cookie whip and brilliant person and a lot of confidence, a lot of stage energy. And Anitra gives me like a Vegas showgirl, a new version of that we haven't seen yet. You know, she wasn't necessarily a Hollywood starlet raised by Rihanna's Disturbia and in all of the media type stuff, but she has that same energy to her and she has that same visibility and that confidence. And even aesthetically, there's some similarities. I love seeing her. And oh my goodness, I love literally like all of them. I feel like I have to get more into the girls as we go forward. I already know Selena S. Titties. I love her. She's so fun. She's going to do really, really great in speaking bits, like moments where it's like, if she has to hold a panel or has to like handle a conversation, things of that nature, she's great. Cause she had like a one woman show on a mic for 2 hours and she can keep the whole audience entertained, which is not impossible because she does it, but it's very, very rare that you see someone who does that really well. So I'm excited to see like there's specific type of like those type of challenges. She's going to do really, really good. I'm going to end up naming the whole cast. Like there's Jack.
It's a great cast. Yeah.
It's a really, really good cast. And I like that we have some legends, especially like Sasha, where it's like, you already know she's going to slay. You already know that she's like a top contender. Who's gonna send her home? Not even God. So it's like you know you're gonna get high quality from her, but the fact that you're also gonna get so much good quality from so many new and hungry people, that's what makes it exciting for me. I love when I watch a show and I can't really tell you who is exactly gonna do it. Even Lux Noir's crazy ass, like I've known her for a while and she's such a firecracker, but it translates so funny to me on TV, where I think she's kind of going through like a Jasmine Kennedy moment where she's learning a lot about herself that she never thought she would have needed to learn. But seeing her television reflection, I think is a little different from what her initial reality was. So watching her, I think she's going to have a great there's a bit, like, I see, like, when I look at her, I see a roller coaster. I see so many ups and downs and just many things. But the one thing the kid has is a lot of star power. So it's going to be exciting to kind of see her, like, really go through it. Because, I mean, even her delusional 40 inches, I'm like, baby, this is 26 and it's already longer. Like, huh?
Yeah.
But I love it.
It's a weird hill to die on, but yeah.
It's camp. It's camp. And I think that she didn't realize it was camp. And I think now she's learning that it was camp, but the fact that it was camp is making it where it's not a flat moment for her. So right. Good.
Love it. Carrie Colby, thank you so much for being here. Carrie Cares is on WOW Plus right now. All episodes are out.
All of them. We really went the Netflix route where it's like stream at your heart's content. If you want to pace yourself and, you know, sip a little bit, take it in one episode at a time. There's a lot going on in every episode and no episode is similar to the other at all. So you can pace yourself. You can binge it, get it all out the way and then come back and like digest certain parts. And I think it's the second episode is like, that one's a real, like, that's the one where I get like, it's the one with the Reese where we talk about like our trans experiences and I share really in depth things I didn't even get to share on Drag Race, where it's like, you really get to know who and why and where I'm coming from. And it's a very emotional episode, but it's a very real episode. So I think like the episode 2-1 is like one of my favorites, but I'm just so excited to see it all back.
Excellent.
Can't wait. Carrie, thank you so much. Homophilia is a World of Wonder podcast produced and engineered by the wonderful Renee Colvert. Our theme song is by the amazing Ben Wise. We want to thank the incredible Michael Pressman and everyone at World of Wonder. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter @HomophiliaPod and give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts already. Thank you.